Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to today's webinar. We're going to be talking today about the SharePoint 2013 app model. My name is Bruce Johnson, and I am the Vice President of Technology at ObjectSharp Consulting. We're a consulting company in the Toronto area, consulting and training company, actually. And I have been talking to people all over North America, actually, about this particular app model for the last probably close to 6 months now. It has been a lot of fun doing that, and I'm glad to be able to bring some of the information on to you. It's an interesting topic for a couple of reasons. If for those of you that happen to have been at the webinar yesterday when we were talking about the Office App Model, there's a lot of similarity, but some of the complexities of SharePoint do change things a little bit. But ultimately, we're going to be getting to well, like I said, we're going to be talking about the app model, the different things that you can do with it, what it means to you as a developer, how you can take advantage of it. That's really what we're trying to get to today. And so, let's get back to there. So, again, agenda. Looking at the app model, we'll talk about the hosting architecture. That's probably the most complicated piece related to this particular app model. Talk a little bit about the architecture, and then talk about how the app can talk to SharePoint and why that's a different thing than it might have been in the past will become evident as we kind of go through the process. So the idea behind the SharePoint app model is that, well, first of all, let's go back to if you've been actually working with SharePoint for a little while, then you will be aware that if you ever wanted to write an application for SharePoint, you had to write it using special tooling that existed inside of Visual Studio, and if you wanted to deploy your application, depending upon exactly, you know, what kind of application it was, you had to create a WSP package, you had to push the WSP package up to the SharePoint server, and it had to be installed from that particular point. It was a, not saying it was a complicated process, but it was not necessarily as easy as just simply deploying other kinds of applications. The SharePoint app model in 2013, the SharePoint applications no longer live inside of SharePoint. You don't actually have to install software onto the SharePoint server in order to be able to create a SharePoint application. So instead, the SharePoint apps are custom code that execute on the client, and the client is just going to be, in this case, would be a browser, and are going to be hosted someplace else. And that someplace else could be anywhere in the cloud. You can host it on Azure, you can host it on your own servers, you can host it on-premise with the SharePoint server, but not in the same space, if you wish, as the SharePoint server itself. Applications are granted permissions, access to be able to access different pieces of SharePoint if it needs to, using OAuth, the OAuth protocol. And the apps themselves get to communicate with SharePoint using REST or CSOM, client-side object model, so that while the apps are physically separate from the SharePoint server, they still have the ability to grab the information and actually have access to it. So the approach here ends up with a number of very different applications. The kinds of applications that you create end up being very different because of this. The kind of apps you might have created in SharePoint in the past would have been, you know, I need to add a list. I need to do small bits and pieces of things. Whereas you can now create an application that's much more focused across a much broader kind of scenario. On the slide, you can see event tracking and ticket management. But it's just you have the ability to write a web application independently of SharePoint that is still integrated into SharePoint in the places that you need it to be. You can show parts of your application in SharePoint. You can use SharePoint for authentication if you wish. You can use it for storage, but you don't have to. And because of that, the semantics for installation, for upgrading, and uninstalling are a lot easier. The thing that gets deployed into your SharePoint server ends up being an XML file, not much more than an XML file as it turns out. And that's what triggers SharePoint to do the stuff that it happens to do. So from the user experience, what you'll find is that everything in SharePoint is an application. And if I actually flip across and take a look at this, is what you see here is a SharePoint 2013 site. And you can see that it looks different from SharePoint sites in the past. It has a lot of the same kind of features. If I actually drill down into the site contents that you can see here, it has a lot of the same kind of, you know, I've got assets, I've got site pages, I've got documents, and I can add those kinds of libraries in exactly the same way I have in the past. so that it's not like you've lost anything. But what has happened is that each one of those things, the app packages, the documents, those are also SharePoint apps unto themselves. And I've also got the ability to add in my own. One of the things that you can see right up in here is I happen to have an add an app button. I click on that and it takes me to, first of all, I have the ability to add apps to my library from my from my organization if I want to do that. But I've also got a SharePoint store that I happen to be able to go to. And this SharePoint store is a store in the same manner that in the same manner that Windows 8 has a store, Windows Phone happens to have a store. And my ability to install applications on here, besides the different things, I can actually click on one of the applications. You get a page very similar to what you get for the Windows Phone or Windows 8 store. You click on Add It, and it is now going through the process of installing that application. Well, as soon as I click Continue, anyway. It is going to install that application. It prompts me to for permissions. I say yes. I want to trust this application. And it now will direct me back to my site. And what you can see in here is the beginnings of this Dell Social Hub application that happens to be there. The installation process, as I said, is an XML file that ends up being pulled down, included inside of a list that is actually inside of SharePoint. In a couple of seconds, there we go, it's already done. So I can, there we go, now it's already done. When I click on this, it actually launches up this application. Now, what you see here is a SharePoint app. Now, this particular app is a full screen. It's taking the entire screen that happens to be out there. And you can also, those of you who are used to SharePoint 2010 are will completely immediately recognize that this doesn't look at all like a SharePoint app has in the past. And yet that's exactly what it is. And in fact, it's hosted in a different location. It's got a slightly different URL, and we'll talk about where the hosting is in just a second. More importantly, I have this little back button, and this is pretty much the only requirement that SharePoint 2013 apps have. You have to be able to navigate back to your original site. And so that is the kind of thing that we're talking about with respect to that particular SharePoint application. Back into the slides for just a second. So the idea here is more or less the following. Your code is going to be running off your SharePoint box. I can host that application in Azure. I can host it any place I want to host it. It's a standard web application. There's nothing magical about it. It's going to be using some JavaScript. It's going to be using HTML5, CSS, PHP, jQuery, Knockout, Kendo UI, whatever you want to use in there, you're absolutely welcome to be able to use. And then there are hooks that are available into SharePoint that allow you to be able to get at the information if you want to be able to do that. You may have to use OAuth to do authentication. You may have to do JavaScript stuff. There may be a couple other things you might have to do to avoid some cross-domain problems. But ultimately, it's running in a completely separate environment than it has in the past. So the benefits of this from a development perspective are you have no custom code on the SharePoint server at all. So there's no sandbox that's required anymore. I'm not installing anything. I don't have to put anything to the global assembly cache. So if you've been working in this kind of hosted SharePoint environment where you don't have access to those things, this new app model is awesome from that perspective. It works in SharePoint Online, in Office 365 SharePoint Online. One of the interesting, descriptions that I heard of it right off the bat was that it reduces the ramp-up time. You no longer have to know SharePoint in order to build apps. I'd put that as about a 50% true statement. You don't have to know SharePoint in order to create a compelling user experience. Before, you had to know how to style out your SharePoint, and you had to do a lot of things to try and make it look and integrate with SharePoint at that level. I don't need that anymore. I have the freedom to use HTML the way I want to use it, CSS, whatever components, whatever UI pieces, whatever JavaScript elements I want to use, I absolutely can do so. If you want to integrate with SharePoint, you still need to have an understanding of the client-side object model. You still have to need to know what need to know what client context happens to be. So the knowledge doesn't go away, but it ends up being segregated. At best, it generally speaking is segregated. If I'm doing an MVVM kind of pattern, I'm using ASP.NET MVC. It's someplace in the controller piece that may turn around and actually communicate with SharePoint to persist information or retrieve information. So you do get this ability to take SharePoint places that you would never have thought to have taken it before. And that Dell Social app is just simply one kind of example of that. So this next slide is probably the most important to kind of grok when you're understanding all of this. There's basically three choices that you have for hosting your SharePoint application. The first one is actually the simplest, and that's what's called a SharePoint hosted app. Now, a couple of concepts here just so we've got some terminology. You'll notice down in the bottom right it says host web and app web. The host web is the name that is given to the SharePoint server that is the host for the app. So in other words, it's the place you've installed your app into. The app web is a subsite that gets automatically created on that SharePoint server when you install an app. It is the place where the app lives inside of SharePoint. So you'll hear me use the term host web and app web, and that's really what I mean. Your application, when you install it and that app web is created, your application has complete control over the app web. It's actually hard for anybody outside of your app to be able to get to it. So it's not like you're going to be able to, people aren't going to be able to navigate into it. But you can create lists and create items and do whatever you need to do inside of that particular world. The host web, you have no access to by default. Not 100% true, it's 99% true. You've got access to things like the name. You've got access to little bits and pieces of information, but you can't do anything. You can't create lists. You can't add items to lists. You can't add documents. In order to be able to do that, you have to ask for and be granted permissions. Now, this SharePoint hosted app is basically run entirely on the SharePoint server through that app web. And in this particular instance, it is unlike the other two hosting models. And because you can't have code sitting on the server, you're not installing anything, you are limited to the out-of-the-box SharePoint components. You can, all of your client-side logic will be in JavaScript. Everything will be done on client. There is no code behind that you can possibly have. There's no MVC that's allowed. You are just simply deploying pages and JavaScript and using whatever controls you happen to want. There's some benefits to this we'll talk about in just a second, but that's one of the three hosting models that happen to be there. The other two are what are called cloud-based hosting. And so the idea with cloud-based hosting is all of a sudden I'm going to need to use CSOM and REST to be able to get information. Depending upon where I'm getting it from, I might need to use OAuth. SharePoint can send me remote events and I can respond to them. Now, there are two architectural approaches that fit into here. The first one is what is called provider hosted. And the idea behind provider hosted is you're bringing your own server infrastructure. You can host this any place that you want. You can have us, run it off your laptop, post it on a server that's running in your basement, go to Rackspace, get a server there, create a website, an Azure website, create an Azure VM and upload your application there. It doesn't make any difference. It is a physically separate machine, a server from the SharePoint server itself. Okay? The third choice here is moderately unfortunately named, and that is something called an auto-hosted app. And the idea behind this is actually very, very cool. So if you're going to auto-host your application, what happens is the following. When your application is installed, SharePoint is going to do a number of things, but ultimately, and I've got a next slide actually kind of walks through it, but ultimately what it's going to do is it's going to create for your application a special Windows Azure website. It's going to deploy your application into that particular website, and that is the communication that happens to go on between when the SharePoint web wants to launch your application, it's going to talk to that particular Azure website. Now, the confusion that I've seen when I've talked to people about this, nothing wrong with putting a provider-hosted app onto an Azure website. It's not the same thing as an auto-hosted app. An auto-hosted app, probably the best way to do it is to describe it like this. If you are taking a look at the different kinds of models that you have, the different things, the different ways you have to be able to approach this, if I deploy something using a SharePoint-hosted model, I deploy it onto that person's onto my client's machine. SharePoint, an app web is created inside of that machine. I have no access to that at all. It's all running inside of their machine. Any data that I create in there, it's all running on that particular machine. So it's very, very isolated. If I'm trying to sell my app to like 100 people, perfect, because each one of those 100 people is going to have their own instance of my app running on their own instance of SharePoint server, wherever that happens to be. Great. Don't have to worry about multi-tenancy at all. Provider hosted, on the other hand, if I'm hosting this on a web server, then I sell my app to 100 people, each one of those 100 people is talking to my one web server. Now I have to deal with multi-tenancy. I have to know which client you belong to, and I have to make sure that the data that you have, the data that you see, is the only data that you happen to get. I have to manage multi-tenancy at that particular level. The auto-hosted application flips a little bit back towards the SharePoint side. Every client that purchases my app, installs it, will get their own Windows Azure website. I will have zero access to that particular Azure website. I have no idea where it is. It's actually, to be honest, it's actually deployed into a special section of Windows Azure that has been specifically reserved for this particular purpose. No way to get at it, no way to make any changes to it, no way to see the data. But I don't have to worry about multi-tenancy. Every client has their own Windows Azure website that happens to be available. So it works out quite nicely in terms of being able to manage the multi-tenant side of things. So just so you can see what the auto-hosted works, when you build a SharePoint application, you actually build it up into a .app file, you deploy it, there's a store that you can publish your applications into. I already showed you what that looked like on the web side of it, but you basically give your application to the marketplace, and when SharePoint installs that particular application, it will automatically go out and build, provision a Windows Azure website, and it will install your application into that particular site. It's also possible, as part of that auto deployment process, to have SharePoint provision a SQL Azure database and to run a schema that will automatically, you know, build up the tables in your database and also run data population scripts. So you've got access to all of that particular information. Now, I mentioned before that the information that you happen to see is actually fairly small. It is. Inside of the projects that you happen to have, there is something called an app manifest file. And if I pop over to my right into here, I've got a SharePoint application popped up. And if I take a look at my app manifest file, I've got a nice little designer, but if I want to go and see what's going on under the covers, open with. Right, I have this thing right here, this app principle. This app principle is the thing that determines which model I happen to be using. In this particular instance, that internal says this is a SharePoint hosted application. If I was to say auto deployed web application, it's auto hosted. If I was to say provider hosted, then I say remote web application and I have to give a client ID. So ultimately that XML file is the thing that gets deployed into your SharePoint. It gets actually loaded up into a list inside of your SharePoint server, and that's where most of the magic from there happens to come. Now, turns out there's three different app shapes that happen to be available to you. There is what is called the immersive full page application. The immersive full page app is what you saw with that Dell social application. It takes over the entire page. From the user's perspective, they've got no idea that they happen to be working inside of SharePoint. There's also what's called an app part. And an app part is like a web part, except for apps, which sounds stupid, I know, but ultimately that's the description. It's a small piece of functionality that sits inside of your other page on your particular site, and you can show bits and pieces of your application through that. There's a couple of things that are different between an app part and a web part, but conceptually they work out to be the same thing from a user perspective. And there's also an extension application, and an extension application actually allows for actions to be added to documents. If you recall the little JavaScript menu that exists in the documents list inside of SharePoint, you click on the little drop down and you can actually add actions in there that will turn around and launch against your particular application. Now, let's show you what an example of an app part happens to look like. And to do that, I kind of come back over to where I was before. And the way the app part sits up, we'll actually do it this way. This is an application, so I'll actually run the application so you can see what it happens to look like. I need to be able to log in. And this is an Office 365 account that I happen to be working against. And I'll keep myself signed in because it's a little bit easier. And we give it a couple of seconds to spin up. And it launches the application. Now, this application actually has two components. It's got a full page portion, and it's also got an app part portion. So this is the full page portion. Again, I'll show you the code in just a couple of seconds. So this is the full page portion of it. I go back into my team site. I'm going to go to my site contents. I'm going to go to my site pages. I'm going to pull up home for a second. I'm going to edit my home page. And this is all very similar to what you would have done inside of SharePoint 2010 as well, by the way. And then what I want to do is go into insert. And you'll notice that what you have here is I've got the ability to insert an app part. And that's different from one of the web parts. When I click on app part, I actually have got this little demo app part that happens to be available. And I can click on add, and it will now take that app part of mine. And you can see that because all of the stuff chugging along in the background. And I have this demo app part that happens to be here. Now, is that phenomenally, awesomely fantastic? Well, of course, yes, it is. I'm an incredible designer, as you can tell by just looking at that particular web page. But the really slick part is that that small piece of functionality is an iframe that is pointing back to my particular application, wherever it happens to be running. And I can make that area look exactly what I want to make it look like using standard HTML tools. Now, in terms of the way it looks out from a coding perspective, I don't need to change that, and I can leave the page, and that's all fine. So if I actually take a look at the code behind this, I have got my pages, and I have my, don't need you, I've got my default page. This is my full page application that you happen to be looking at. And it is just simply, calling initialize. There's not really doing much of anything that happens to be there. It's if you take a look at SharePoint Ready, actually, can I get there from here easily? Yeah, it's just simply putting bonjour world out on, because I figured I'd be, multilingual as I'm speaking across Canada. It's just simply putting text out into a div that happens to be on the page. So there's nothing particularly magical about that. This is just simply a full page application. You'll notice it has the same kind of structure that a standard SharePoint app or an ASPX page inside of SharePoint would typically look like even right now. So as it turns out, I can also have that be its own page, but I've also got the ability to utilize within that page the functionality that already exists at that particular level. Now, the thing about the app part is, I'll close you all down, the app part is an ASPX page itself. The thing that you will notice different about it is that it is a full-on HTML page. In other words, it is not just a user control. It's a full page that is completely capable of being rendered. As I said, it actually renders as an iframe inside of the application so that it has all of the functionality that a page has. And that includes the ability to do postbacks, to be able to, you can do responsive design if you want in there. And in fact, if you're going to create little app parts, I strongly suggest that you do create responsive design, because your users will have the ability to shape and change and make, modify the page as much as you happen to give it. So that's kind of what you're faced with. Rather than creating this little user control, you have a page. The page is small. The page shows part of your information and allows the user to inject it into one of their pages inside of SharePoint. Incredibly powerful functionality, and it's very easy for you to now extend your application out into that particular environment. It's got JavaScript. It's got CSS. It's got everything you need from that particular level. So you like I said, your capabilities here are fairly unlimited at that particular level. So that's kind of what you're looking at in terms of the different shapes that you happen to have inside of your application. Now, one of the things we haven't talked about, and we've kind of alluded to, but we haven't talked about yet, is this concept of how do I get information back and forth from my app in SharePoint. These are things running in two different worlds, and that's kind of the toughest thing to think about. One of the first things to be aware of is you no longer have to use SharePoint as a database. As I've talked to people about this, you don't have to create lists and populate those lists anymore. You're writing a web application. That web application is running on your server, and it has access to whatever database you want to give it access to. So the idea that I need to create a list that I can store some of this information in, I don't have to do that anymore. And in fact, just as any of you happen to be vendors out there, if you have a web-based application, my integration point into SharePoint is incredibly simple. As I said, from a UI perspective, all I need to do is have something in the top left corner that navigates back to where my SharePoint host happens to be. Everything else can be exactly as it is, and so you may very well be able to quickly and easily take advantage of the fact that your app can be ported to SharePoint by just simply adding a user interface element, UX element, to the top left corner of your page. Everything else is the same. Your data can be stored exactly where it was before. Now, is that going to be the best experience? No, probably not. I have mentally, when I think about this, ObjectSharp happens to have a time entry system that we use, a web-based time entry system. It would take me probably no more than a couple of hours to integrate that system into SharePoint. However, that's probably not sufficient. It might very well be that you want to have a page that's got a report that surfaces up onto a SharePoint page. That will take a little bit longer, but massively, massively easy to do. All right? So we do have the ability inside of SharePoint to need to be able to interact with SharePoint itself. Okay, and so your communication is going to depend upon how you or where you happen to come from with respect to SharePoint. So there's an element of locality that determines what the best way to go. Ultimately, you're going to end up using client-side object model and a REST-based API. Okay, so those are almost givens. They get wrapped in different things, so you might not always see them that way, but ultimately you're using CSOM and REST. As well, there are permissions that you need to be granted in order to be able to access certain parts of SharePoint from within your application, and you may, again, depending on what you're trying to do, may need to have support for OAuth. You need to actually be able to utilize that. Fortunately, there are some tools that will be able to help you that we'll talk about in just a second. So, probably the best way to think about this has got to do with, think about how my SharePoint happens to lay out. I have got, on the left side of this slide, I have got my web application. I have got a client-side app. I have got a web server. And those two things are going to communicate with each other exactly the way you would do it right now. I make, AJAX calls between the two. I do postbacks. I've got an MVC set up. So my client-side app and my web server are exactly the same as any web application you've created in terms of the communication. When I deploy this, my app, onto SharePoint, as I said, it creates a SharePoint app web that my application owns, that has complete control over. And there's also the concept of a SharePoint host web that I may or may not want to have access to, because where nobody can create anything inside of my app web, people might put stuff, or I might want to push a document out to a library inside of my host web so that the people on SharePoint and my client will be able to read it. I might want to start a workflow on my host web. So I've got reasons why I might want to be able to access that particular information. So the technology that you end up using depends very much on where you're coming from and how you're going to where you're coming from and where you're actually going to be going. So if you take a look at the diagram, you'll notice I've got a number of lines being drawn here. So, for example, if I'm trying to get from my client-side application back to my SharePoint app web, that's fairly straightforward. It was The iframe, the page on which the iframe resides, is actually coming from that SharePoint app web. That's the domain, so it becomes very easy to use client-side object model functionality to be able to do that. If I'm trying to get from my client-side app to my SharePoint host web, I have a cross-domain problem that we'll drill down on a little bit. So I need to have a solution to handle the fact that, you know, I'm a client-side application coming from, you know, domain bruce.com, and I'm trying to communicate via JavaScript with a, you know, client SharePoint.com. So I have to deal with how I'm going to handle that side of it. On the web server side, in both cases, I'm not running inside of a client, so I don't have any cross-domain issues, but SharePoint has no idea who the hell I am. I'm a server, and I'm making a request to a SharePoint host or app web, and they've never heard of me. So I need to have a way to be able to authenticate so that they know who I am from an identity perspective, know what permissions I happen to have, and be able to make calls through CSOM or REST at that particular point. So let's take a look at exactly how those flows are going to manifest themselves. Start with the cross-domain calls. So my problem with cross-domain calls, as I said, is more or less the following. This is not a standard issue with respect to SharePoint. It's a standard issue with respect to the way HTML works. You don't get to make a JavaScript call from a page hosted on domain A to domain B. You get a cross-domain unless the recipient of the request allows it. Okay, if you try and do that, you end up with a cross-domain call exception being thrown, a warning being raised. Now, if you're going to host your application, if you're going to have your clients inside of SharePoint Online, install your application, it seems highly unlikely that you're going to get Microsoft to allow your website to be in the domains that it might actually allow cross-domain policy from. So there has to be a way to be able to deal with that. And in this particular instance, the way to handle that is a JavaScript library. It's called sp.requestexecutor.js. And this particular tool is going to use a combination of the PostMessage API inside of HTML5, a hidden iframe, and a proxy page to be able to make this work. And so let's kind of walk through the process, because I like little slides that are semi-animated. So the idea here is the following. You have installed your app. It's been deployed onto a domain called anotherdomain.com. It's a provider-hosted application. You've installed it into the SharePoint server that is called mydomain.com. When your application gets executed, it's actually executing inside of an iframe. So the SharePoint, especially if it's an app part, but the SharePoint creates an iframe running off of its domain, and it loads your page up into that particular iframe. If you try and communicate from using JavaScript from your machine back to that domain, you're going to get cross-site scripting problems. That's pretty much the way it goes. Okay, so the way to handle this problem is, and when I first saw this, my thought was, ew, but as you kind of think about what the different alternatives are, this is actually it's not the first time you've run into this problem. This is quite an elegant solution to a problem that you really don't have many other alternatives for. So the premise here is basically the following. For you to be able to talk to from your application, talk back to the SharePoint server, you actually load a script called sprequestexecutor.js. And what that particular script is going to do is it's going to create on your page a hidden iframe, and it's going to load up into that page a page from the SharePoint server. You'll notice on the right-hand side it's mydomain.com/proxy.aspx. So that is a page that comes from the SharePoint server that's loaded up into a hidden iframe. You don't see it, has no impact on the user experience at all, but it's there. And so now when it comes time for you to communicate with the SharePoint server, you are going to send a message from your JavaScript code into that iframe. The proxy is going to pick it up. It's going to make the call back to its server. Okay. And then you'll get the result back into the proxy, and the proxy will pass it back to you. So by going through this proxy page, you have this ability to avoid the cross-domain problems. Okay, so nice, simple, mechanism for trying to accomplish this particular thing. As I said, elegant, your first instinct might very well be, this isn't nice, but it works, and it's nicely automatic. So just so you can see what it happens to look like, pop open a, let's try that one more time, pop open a project. Give it a second to open. So, what we have got here is this particular page. And this particular page, as you can see, is just simply plain ordinary HTML. It has this named area for a label, and the purpose of the page is going to be to push the host web's name into that particular label. You can see I'm making a reference to jQuery here, and I'm also calling this cross-domain exec.js file, which is where my functionality happens to be. And so inside of here, I'm doing a couple of different things. So you'll notice that if you take a look at this area in here, ultimately what I'm trying to do is I am trying to load up this sprequestexecutor.js file from the layouts 15 directory on my host web URL, which happens to come from my query string. So the query string coming into here has got my host web, my app web, and a few other pieces of information. And I grab that off of the query string and I load up this particular script. That script is going to create the iframe. It is going to load up the proxy page into it. And when that's finished, it's going to execute this JavaScript function. This JavaScript function is actually going to make my call. And it does that by going in and newing up a request executor object, passing in my app web's URL. So at this point, I now have an executor object, and the executor object has an execute async, which actually now executes calls against it. So I have this information, I have this ability now to be able to go and grab information about my site from my app web or my host web. And the URL it builds up is right here. And so this is getting the title of the web with a target equal to my host web. This is a standard REST-based notation for SharePoint 2013. One of them, actually, there's a couple of them. I'm going to call it doing a GET. I'm allowing it to accept JSON with an OData equal verbose. And when I succeed, I'm going to parse the body coming back. I'm going to grab the title out of that information, and I'm going to plug it into my host web title label. And if there's an error, you'll end up seeing that I end up this could not complete cross-domain call error. So now when I run this, this is one of those instances where the running is almost anticlimactic when you get right down to it, because theoretically, he says, it should just work. We'll see how that goes. Okay, so first of all, it's actually prompting me to see to trust this particular application. This gives you a bit of idea of the kinds of levels of trust that you have. I'm letting it read items in the site. I'm letting it read or edit or delete documents that happen to be in one of these lists. I'm letting it get information about the users on this site. Move things between workflow stages. One of the interesting things, let me just digress for a second, but one of the interesting things about the way permissions work inside of SharePoint 2013 apps is this is all or nothing. You don't have to you don't have to figure out which permissions they allowed or didn't allow. The person who is installing your application either accepts all of them or doesn't install your application. So if your application is installed and running, then you have the permissions that you happen to have requested. So you don't have that kind of granularity. It makes it much easier for you to be able to write your applications. So I click on Trust It because, you know, well, I know the writers are not that great. We'll just simply trust them for the moment. And you'll notice that what it basically has done here is it has done exactly as I said. It has gone up, it has executed my JavaScript, and it has pulled back ObjectSharp team site from the site. Like I said, not a particularly impressive demo, except for the fact that the domain is this. So it's something not SharePoint.com or not osharp365.sharepoint.com. It's a different domain altogether. And yet I was able to cross domain, make a request, get the information back, and display it all by using the request executor functionality you happen to see there. So as I said, quite nice that you have that. Well, it seems a little awkward initially, quite nice that you have that kind of functionality available to you. And back into here now. Okay, so as I mentioned with that slide earlier on, the other technique you have to be able to grab information involves using OAuth. And this is the scenario where if you're trying to get access from your server-side functionality to be able to get access to the SharePoint that happens to be hosting your application. And so the idea behind SharePoint, or the idea behind how OAuth happens to come into play here is, I've got a couple of different components. I've got my SharePoint server, I've got the browser that your user's using, and I've got app.com, which is where my application happens to be installed. Okay. You'll also notice that I've got this STS, and this secure token server that you see up in the top right is the trusted authentication mechanism for SharePoint. Now, if you're running SharePoint online, the default is to use Azure Access Control Services, ACS. So that's automatically built in. There's no configuration you have to do. If you're running your SharePoint server on-premise, you have to configure an STS if you're trying to do this kind of functionality. So if you don't need to OAuth, then you know, fine, but if you're trying to OAuth, especially with external applications, you're going to need to have that STS available to you. And you can arrange for it to be access control services, you can create your own STS however you want to go. Now, the idea here is my user browses to a SharePoint page, and that SharePoint page has got my app on it. SharePoint talks to ACS, and it gets and signs a token which has the context information and an authentication code that it's going to use. Signs that context token, returns it back to the SharePoint server. The SharePoint server starts to render, and including in that rendering is an iframe, and it's also going to talk to my application posting to my app, and it's going to include that SPApp token, the token that it got back from my SharePoint server. Okay, so now I'm sitting on my application. That iframe redirects to my page. I have the context token. So the presumption here is that my app needs to talk to the SharePoint server that's hosting me. So it takes the context token and it provides that information to the STS. It gets back from the context, it gets back from STS an access token that it can turn around and utilize to make a request to SharePoint server. So at this point, SharePoint server now knows who I am. And depending upon how I've set this up, because one of the things that actually changes inside of SharePoint 2013 is that applications can have their own identity. That a little bit was hinted at when you saw the trust that was given. But the idea here is that as an application making a request, I can make the request either as just me, as the application, or as the user who's actually using the application. And so my capabilities might be different depending upon which that happens to be. But the important thing to be aware of is that my application can actually have permissions that are not related and indeed could be over, above, whatever permissions the person using me might possibly have. I don't have to go into elevated mode. I don't have to do anything special to be able to get that when the administrator installed me, granted access to the permissions that I said I need. At that point, it no longer matter who's using me. I have the ability to use my permissions to get at the information I happen to want to get to. So this mechanism seems moderately complicated, to put it mildly. And indeed, if you were just simply writing your application, you need to be able to go to the STS and get the information back and parse and do all this, know what the flow is, would actually be kind of annoying to put it mildly, right? But ultimately, I'm going to display this nice little information onto my page. My tool to help me is this thing called a Token Helper class. And this is a class that it's part of the template that you get when you create a brand new SharePoint project. It is one of the sweetest classes that exists, at least in my mind, exists in the Microsoft space, because this particular piece of functionality, or this token helper code, it's a C# class. So, and actually, if I'm not mistaken, not in that particular one, because the kind of thing that I did. It's when you create your template, it's just there. So you have no problems getting at it. You can look at it, see what it happens to do. So it's, and there's a lot of different functionality that happens to be available to you. And so if you actually are going through the process of trying to make a call, back to SharePoint from the server, this is the kind of code that you end up seeing. And so what you're looking at is you've got the ability to, first of all, this is a development environment thing to trust all the certificates. But what I do is I grab from my query string, I get my host URL, right? And I'm going to use that a little bit later on when I get my client context. But I have tokenhelper.getContextToken from request. One of the things about the way Microsoft has named their methods is that it's pretty obvious that that particular method is going to get the context token from the request. I'd love it when it's that simple. So it grabs the information from the request that has got the context token, the SP app token that you saw a couple of slides ago. The token helper, you can call now something called get access token. You pass in the context token, and you pass in the SharePoint URL.authority, which is the URL for the secure token service that happens to be set up there. Get access token will take that information, build an HTTP call that will send off to the secure token service along with your context token, get back a result, parse that result, and provide you with an access token. And so now you have an access token. The next step is to make a call using client-side object model or using REST. And you see that information down in here. I'm newing up my, or I'm creating a variable, my client context variable, and then I'm calling token helper dot get client context with access token. I provide my SharePoint URL, which is my host URL, and the access token. And what happens is that token helper now builds up an HTTP request mechanism that will automatically put the appropriate stuff onto the request, the access token onto the request, so that when I make a typical CSOM call, that access token is included and I will be granted the access that I happen to need. And you actually can see that down here. I go load web list, execute query, and all of that functionality gets pushed up. If I wanted to make a REST-based call, you can see that in the lines down here at the bottom. I create an HTTP web request. I'm going after web title. And then I add an authorization header where the bearer is the access token. That's basically the same thing that the client context with access token is doing. It's just doing it behind the scenes so you don't know. So ultimately what you have here is this, a very, very easy mechanism to handle what would otherwise be a fairly complicated dance that you need to do with a secure token service. And so that's basically it from the perspective of our particular presentation. We took a look at what the new app model is, talked about architecturally what it's doing, what the hosting models happen to be, a couple of different ways that we are trying to get some of the that we're trying to get for some of the communications mechanisms that happen to be out there. So from my perspective, that's basically it. From a presentation perspective, we do have people on the chat, I'm hoping, and they're more than welcome to ask any questions that you might have, and I'd be more than happy to spend a couple of minutes answering them. If any of you actually want to send me an email, that's my email address, that's my Twitter account. You're more than welcome to send questions along. I'm happy to answer them as best that I possibly can, or I'll try and find people who have. I know a couple of people who happen to be working inside of the SharePoint development team. I've met them along my little travels, and so that's I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. It's one of those things where there's stuff that you will be able to you'll probably run into stuff. If you think of this as an application, if you think of it as less a SharePoint application, more of a web application, use that in your head to determine where you're putting stuff. Realize that SharePoint is not a database, never has been, was never promoted as being a database. Put your databasey stuff where the database should be. Use the SharePoint stuff for what SharePoint is really good at. Use that when figuring out where to go with your application. You'll find yourself, it's actually quite easy and quite fun to write SharePoint applications. And so I guess with that, I greatly appreciate your attention. And again, if there's any questions, please drop me emails or talk to me on Twitter. And thank you very much for your attention. And have yourself a fine and wonderful rest of the day.